Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Today we're catching up on Mumbrella's first Melbourne Question Time breakfast, which took place on October the 28th. As you're about to hear, we discuss the most effective ad campaign this year, great work, whether there's a talent shortage, Melbourne versus Sydney, which job is better, journalism or media sales? Today's speakers, you've got their full biographies in front of you, but just to reintroduce them, from the my far right, John Thompson, Senior Manager for Road Safety and Marketing at the Transport Accident Commission, Peter Biggs, Bigsy, Clem's Melbourne MD, Eric Beecher, could have lots of titles, but I think we'll just give you Crikey today, if that's okay, Eric. And Frankie Ralston-Good is the Melbourne MD of Naked Communications. So those are our panel. The way it works is many of you have put through questions, which, you know, there's been loads of great questions, so we'll try to get to as many of those as we come. And there'll be a roving microphone coming around so that you can pop that question. Also, probably at sort of halfway through, we'll take a break for a spontaneous question or two, if there's anything that you feel inspired to ask based on what you've been hearing so far. And the one guarantee I will give you is we will get you out of the door by 9:30. So I promise that we'll finish on time because I know everyone's got things to do. So, you know, even if we kind of have to sort of rush slightly to get there, we will get you out of the door for 9:30. So let's get to the first question. And the sponsor gets the privilege of the first question. So Ed Pullen from Becalm, if we can get a microphone to Ed, please.
Hey guys, my question is quite simple, keeping that it's quite early in the morning still. What have been some of your favourite campaigns of the year so far?
Let's maybe start with Bigsy for that one, if we can, please.
Being a New Zealander, I'd like to pay tribute to a campaign done by Colenso BBDO, mainly because I think it's a wonderful example of co-creating a brand and being brave enough to kind of give the brand away and allow people to share in the brand and engage with it, which is the Taste of Yellow campaign. I don't know if you've seen it or experienced it. Basically, Yellow Pages in New Zealand, of course, wanted to do something in terms of engaging people and with their brand and making the brand more relevant. So the campaign was around, you know, asking people, can you invent the taste of yellow? And it was an extraordinary kind of response. Just shows you this is Generation C, which I think we're living with a whole generation that is absolutely creative. And the sensation caused around ordinary people trying to invent, trying to manufacture the taste of yellow. And I just thought that you know we live now not in the world of telling, but actually sharing, allowing people to share and participate in the brand. I think that's been a fantastic example for me.
Same question to John Thompson.
It's an interesting one. When I had a look at this question, I thought, when was the last time I sat around the office and talked with someone and said, what about that television campaign we saw last night? Wasn't that fantastic? And I really struggled to find something on there that we'd had a conversation about and thought, Is that a worry about what's being produced on our TV network? Obviously, the Old Spice campaign that's been run out of the US has been a huge global phenomenon, so that's a big one. And for us, I'm going to be a little bit parochial and pick our own campaign, the Ripple Effect campaign that the TAC ran.
Eric Beecher.
Well, I'm actually a journalist, so...
You don't notice advertising.
I have noticed the... when I read... Mumbrella and occasionally BNT and Ad News, which I hardly read now, but because of Mumbrella, you know, I understand the kind of passion and angst that goes into, in the advertising industry, goes into the creativity here. So, but personally, I actually like that ANZ TV campaign. But I was having lunch with a senior banker not from ANZ the other day, and he was saying that all their tracking research says that it's very entertaining, but it doesn't work. But I don't know if that's right or not.
And Frankie.
Hi. I would have said the campaign that's really got us talking is actually the Australian Tourism and Oprah. And not just the fact that they're rebranding the Opera House, Oprah House, but the fact that they had the foresight to say, how can we attach our brand to another brand that really matters to people? And how can we attach ourselves to someone who has a social network that we want to be tapped into? And it doesn't involve digital or Facebook. It involves going to the most connected person in America and getting her to bring her friends over to Australia. So I think that was is a fantastic idea and will be a great campaign.
Okay, a linked question from Sally. And I do apologise if I pronounce your name wrong. Sally Rashola from The Herald. Sally, where are you? Right at the back. Let's see how quickly it takes a microphone to get there. How did I do on pronouncing your name?
Pretty good. Hi. My question is, what piece of creative advertising or marketing that you've been involved in are you most proud of?
Yeah, so piece of work that you've been involved in yourself. So chance to blow your trumpet. Maybe we'll start at this end this time, Frankie.
I've got a big trumpet and I'm about to blow it. So the thing we've done this year that we're really very proud of is actually working with Julian over here, who's at Cricket Australia, and we've worked closely with him in helping to redefine and understand how to drive people to different forms of the game, particularly around one day cricket. And for an English person and for all the Australians working on it, it's an absolute privilege to be working with the soul of a nation, which is how we see the game of cricket. So we're extremely proud of that.
And Eric, I guess you see pieces of advertising creative flit past your various properties.
Well, I see them flip past, but they don't stop in front of me, so I think I'll pass on this question.
Bixie.
I think it would have to be, for me, Magic Salad Plate. 4 and 20 Magic Salad Plate, which was a phenomenon we didn't really expect. And for two reasons. One is Magic Salad Plate has always, or 4 and 20 has always been the champion of male hunger. So what do you do for men in an environment, in a context where everybody's telling them to eat healthy? How do you allow them permission to still have their 4 and 20 meat pie? So the salad, it's a brand again, not telling or saying, but a brand actually doing something to be the champion of male hunger. And the other thing is, somebody
it's
asked
worth
me
for the few people who aren't familiar with the Magic Salad Plate, it's probably worth explaining the mechanism.
All it was a plastic plate that if you bought your pack of 4 and 20 pies, you could send in your coupon and a little bit of money, and you'd get your plastic Magic Salad Plate, which had salad on it, so it looked like you're eating your pie with a salad, and the theory is that makes you more attractive to women, and. So men believed it. We'll believe anything. We're desperate. It did marvellous things for the sale of 4 and 20. But the sales of 4 and 20. But what was really interesting to me, because somebody said to me, "What was it?" And I said, "Actually, it began. It was three or four different briefs had come in, and some clever people at the agency said, we'll pull them into one idea." And the other thing is what is it? Is it a sales promotion piece? Is it a piece of advertising? Is it a response piece? Well, it's all of them. And I think that also says something about the challenge and opportunities for brands and clients and agencies now. All of those, it's interesting, the B&T Awards still have, strangely in this day and age, a direct marketing company and advertising agency. I would say that whether you're a DM company or an advertising agency or a media company, you're actually doing all of those things.
I think I must confess, I think in my days at B&T, it was me who came up with those categories.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. So I think, I'm just trying to be very profound here early in the morning, but I think that's a challenge and opportunity for us in the way we're working in reality now.
And John, you touched on ripples.
Yeah, I touched on ripple effect. I think probably the pieces of work that I'm most proud of at the TAC, and there are a number, but to pick one or two, I'll pick the Pictures of You campaign from 2008. That really put the issue of speeding back on the agenda. It had been one that had been under threat for some time. It was a great piece of creative, well thought out, and it was the first time we used real families, real people who had been affected by speeding-related road trauma. It was very powerful, but it was very powerful too because we got great buy-in from the media industry as well. So that was one piece of work. The other one was when we developed with the Nine Network the Sudden Impact TV series. So took our content that we've been producing for 20 years and got out of the ad break and got into the content side of the equation on television, which I think where the future is.
Okay, I'll take another question. I'm Audrey Maxwell, Audrey from the Communications Council.
Thank you, Tim. Good morning, everyone. The question's for everyone on the panel, really. Do you believe there's a talent shortage in the media and marketing industry? And if so, why do you think that is? Do you think it's tighter budgets, lack of training, age discrimination, lack of flexibility and genuine part-time opportunities, or other factors?
There's a few choices there, Eric.
My sort of segment is really media and you know the publishing side of media, online publishing primarily, and where our business and this sector is growing at an enormous rate. So we have a voracious appetite for talent, and it's hard. I mean, because it's essentially a new kind of industry, online content, and I suspect on the ad side as well. The number of people trained for it is very different to established media. And so the answer is yes, it is a real problem and challenge. And what we tend to try and do is to find really bright, younger people, graduates or a couple of years out of university, with all the right instincts, and then bring them in and train them and mould them. And that's very successful.
Frankie.
Actually, I know your list was quite long, but the thing I'd add to your list is you need a strong brand, because at Naked, we don't find a talent shortage. We find that talented people really want to come and work at Naked. Our issue is actually training them once they get there. So we do have some fantastically talented people. We have no shortage of them coming to us. It's about training them once they get there. And we think one of the reasons that they're coming is because we have built a strong brand that the talent is attracted to. So the answer to your question, I believe, is actually to build a place that people want to work at, and then the talented people will come to you. And when they get there, it's your responsibility to train them for the job that you need them to do.
John.
I think Frankie's right there in a lot of regards. But just to add to that, I think there's a couple of issues. One, I don't think our university structure is necessarily punching out the types of graduates or the types of skills that we need to get into the workplace. And I also don't think we have necessarily developed a very clear pathways for graduates in particular coming into the industry. So, yeah.
Okay. And finally, Bixie.
I totally agree with Frankie. I mean, I think Richard Florida's book, The Rise of the Creative Class, which he says applies to cities and perhaps countries, also applies, I think, to organisations. So there is an enormous creative talent pool out there, and I think they'll come to places that will allow them to fulfil that talent and nurture it.
Next question, a nice controversial one, I hope. Nicola Patterson.
Could be controversial. The majority of clients seem to be gravitating towards Sydney. Is the Melbourne market becoming a tad more irrelevant as the Sydney market tends to dominate? And are we going to start to see people's careers drifting north towards Sydney to achieve the levels they want to achieve?
Let's start over at the far end this time with John.
I'm not sure I can add too much to that. I mean, it's the larger city. It's probably got more. It's got more headquarters and key businesses, so there's going to be more opportunities in Sydney. Is the Melbourne market irrelevant? I think that's a fair stretch. I'd hate to be, you know, there's a few other capital cities around that would peg under Melbourne. So I don't think you necessarily have to move, but I think moving is certainly a potential for future growth.
Biggs, you came to Melbourne to seek your fortune.
I did. I don't know if I got it yet. And I just realised I'm not staring at Tim's crutch. I'm actually trying to stare at the questions on his lap. And I just realised that some of you might be thinking, he's fixated with your nether regions. I'm not. I'm just trying to get ahead
of the
questions.
Watch out for the camera angles.
So just to clear that little matter up, in case you were wondering.
They are now.
I'll stare at John now. The Sydney-Melbourne thing fascinates me. I don't really care about Sydney very much. I, I think Melbourne's fantastic. I think the clients here, talking about with our Sydney agents about clients in Sydney, I think the clients in Melbourne are a dream. They're loyal, they're intelligent, they take the time to build relationships with agencies. They don't go to pitch for any artificial or knee-jerk reason. And I think the work coming out of Melbourne, the creative work coming out of Melbourne is extraordinary. And it's interesting, we're working with a client in Sydney, and they've actually got a headquarters here in Melbourne, but they've also got a headquarters in Sydney, so we're working with the marketing execution people in Sydney. But there's a real conversation about bringing it back to Melbourne, which again, for all of the right reasons, to have a better relationship and partnership. So I think Melbourne, from what I've experienced, will continue to be a very strong place to do business in as a creative business. And I think the reason for that is there are clients here who are here for the long term and want to be with their agencies and partners for the long term.
Okay, Eric, you're someone who's qualified to speak, having had a career in both Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not qualified to speak in terms of agencies and clients and that kind of thing, but the thing that I have observed, having grown up and worked in Sydney and spent the last 20 years in Melbourne, is that...
And you're being modest, not pointing out that you were the editor of the Sydney Morning Herald.
Well, yeah, well, that was my job, but is that it seems to me, and this has been the case, I think, for the last 5 or 10 years, but not before that, is Melbourne is a much, much more attractive place to live for lots of people than Sydney or than anywhere else in this country, and people, you know, whereas 10 years or more ago, I think it wasn't, and therefore the choice of head office location or where your agency was or whatever was made much easier because Sydney was so attractive, whereas I think that has turned completely.
Frankie?
For us, I think it depends on what kind of career you want to have, and the way we put it is, in Sydney, you win the business and then you build a relationship. And in Melbourne, you build the relationship and then you win the business. If you're a good salesperson and you want to do lots of selling, go and work in Sydney. If you want relationships and deliver great work with a client, work in Melbourne.
Well, we'll stick with the career advice and take a question from Sarah Lawrence. Sarah, where are you? Just on the end over here. Strategically placed everyone at opposite points so that Sean gets a bit of exercise.
I've worked as a journalist and in media sales. Which side of the fence does the panel recommend will lead to the most satisfying career?
Let's maybe start with Frankie for that one. Your career advice, should Sarah, who I know is just about to come back into the job market again, should she choose journalism or should she choose media sales?
Yeah, who will you sell your soul to, I guess, is the answer to that question. How do you define job satisfaction, really, is the question you have to ask yourself. And they're obviously very different. You're housed in the same building, but are you investigating things or are you selling things, ultimately? And only you can answer that for yourself.
Eric?
I suspect there are a lot more jobs in media sales than there are in journalism. So from that point of view, you probably have a more reliable career path. I agree with Frankie. I mean, it's a question of what satisfaction means to you. I think journalism schools are full at the moment. There's almost every university in the country has a journalism school. There's almost as many journalism students as there are jobs in journalism now, and that's at a time when there are far fewer jobs in journalism. But it's interesting to me when you talk to a lot of students, they go into it for reasons that may not actually lead to the stimulation they expect to get. They go into it because they think it's either glamorous or whatever. And a large number of them end up working in PR, which is a quite different sort of job. So I think the answer on journalism is you actually have to love it and have the sensibility for it, and if you don't, then you're not going to get the satisfaction.
Biggs, are you somebody who went through something of a career change, which is probably worth also sharing?
Yeah, I studied to be a priest. That was cool. And then I didn't leave the church. The church left me. And then I finished at university with my degree in Latin, which is... which is very useful. Although somebody rang me up the other day and said, you know, we need a motto. We need a motto. So, okay. So, and then
what did you come up with?
I can't remember now. It was unintelligible, really. And then to most people. And then a novelist rang me up and asked me to give him a to see whether his Latin was correct or not. I have a sad life. Those are the highlights of it recently. I can only give you one piece of advice, which a very, very wise man gave me, Joseph Campbell. I don't know if you know Joseph Campbell, world's great expert in mythology. Follow your bliss. And only you know what that is.
And John.
Look, sounds like there's an easy decision and a hard decision for you. There's probably one of those careers you love, but you find it hard to be successful in it, maybe. And then the other one is not something you love, but you find you might be able to do easily. So I'd say follow what you love, not take the easy option.
And John, you originally trained to be a journalist yourself, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And I'm glad I chose the career I chose.
Yes, maybe journalism.
Is that what you really want to do?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the right answer. All right, solve that one.
Correct. You can go now.
Let's see if we can help Adam Joseph with his question.
We should go on TV, John. You know, all those, we could be sort of agony advice people. Oh,
Bigsy, I thought you didn't like TV panel shows about advertising, but anyway.
I do when I'm in them.
Understood.
Let's take a question from Adam.
Hi, Tim. Okay, Shiv Singh, PepsiCo's Director of Digital North America, recently said, forget the Chief Marketing Officer. The next big industry title will be the Chief Marketing Technology Officer, which will require fundamentally different skills than has traditionally been the case. Does the panel think this will hold true in Australia, or is this just another example of social media fizz?
And I'm also going to take a linked question just at the same time from Ella Mitchell from Elora. Is Ella around? There we are. Fortunately nearby.
Thanks, Sean. Hi, everyone. Yes, my question is quite connected. It's just to do with the rapid changes in technologies. What positions should brand managers be considering in investing in to safeguard their brand's position and relevance in the market?
And just to maybe widen it, from Eric's point of view, the media more generally as well, I guess. And maybe I'll start off with you, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really answer the question in terms of marketing technology director or whatever, but there's no doubt that in all of our lives in media, and I'm sure in advertising as well, that the technology in both the narrowest and broadest sense is playing the kind of role that it never did before. And I'm not a technology person, but you can't actually do your job these days without having some understanding and instinct for it, and certainly having really good people around you who know a lot more about it. You just can't do that, whereas that probably wasn't the case 10, 20 years ago.
Frankie?
I don't think it's fizz at all. I think it's kind of mission critical, if you like, for agencies. Technology, to me, is very closely linked to data and behaviour, and we're sort of moving out of ages of persuasion, if you like, and into ages of understanding behaviour and what people are actually doing. And if agencies can't understand that and advise on that, then they will be left behind in a kind of romantic era, if you like, and they need to understand how to affect behaviour. And that is why you need a head of technology and a head of data and a head of business planning, and that's why that needs to be in an agency.
John, what roles do you see maybe from your side of things? What's going to have to emerge?
Look, I think the types of roles that Adam was talking about really do have to evolve, but also coming back to a discussion we had earlier about talent and developing talent, I think, as I said at the time, our universities aren't necessarily punching out the types of people we need. Whether the, you know, the 3-year degree and off you go out into the workforce and try and learn, I think we need to relook at some of that as well and train these people up so that, you know, the chief marketing technology officer replaces the kind of roles that maybe I'm doing today. You know, maybe I need to go and reskill. So,
Bixie, do you need to reskill?
Yeah, I think I do. I do. Having a haircut today at 1:30. Should I get another 2 or just let it grow long? I don't know. But that's kind of what I'm talking about. Is I think technology more often than not is a pipe. It's a channel. What really is behind the technology is the extraordinary ability of brands to have conversations with consumers. So, in my wildest possible dreams, I'd kind of love there to be a title somewhere of Chief Consumer Conversationalist in organisations, because unless brands are in dialogue and truly, truly listening and adapting and allowing consumers to co-create them, they won't be relevant.
Well, that was the first half of Mumbrella's Melbourne Question Time. We'll bring you the rest of that next week.